The Social Speech Podcast, Episode 9, featuring J.D. Lassica. This is where we look at how the newest communication technologies are transforming the oldest, public speaking. Over the next few weeks, I'm talking with some of the smartest public speakers, speechwriters, communicators, and event professionals I know about how they're dealing with social media, the obstacles and opportunities, and maybe what the future holds. I'm talking with J.D. Lassica. He is a fixture at social media conferences, particularly, I've certainly seen him a lot on the nonprofit side as well as on the business side. And that's no coincidence because he has founded two social media consultancies, one focusing on businesses, looking at organizations of all sides, and the other one, a consultancy for nonprofits that also has this terrific learning hub. And you'll find them at socialmedia.biz and socialbright.org. You may well have read his book, Darknet, which certainly influenced a lot of my thinking about the open web. And he's one of the co-founders of OurMedia.org, a free video hosting and sharing site, and now has an environmental focus. JD, welcome, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me, Rob.
So tell me a little bit about the kind of speaking that you do.
Probably a little bit too much for my own good. I'm sort of jetting off, you know, here and there to different parts of the country to mostly give social media boot camps or talks on subjects ranging from how nonprofits or businesses can use social media more strategically to talks on journalism and the future of the media. A few weeks ago, I was at the Nonprofit Technology Conference here in San Francisco, gave an hour and a half boot camp on, the fact that you need a social media strategy and not just putting up a Twitter account, right? And before that, I was in Las Vegas talking to a room full of public service employees who work for municipalities, who might run their own cities, websites, that kind of stuff, about how governments should use social media. heading down to LA in a little while to talk to the state California PTA about education and social media. So, I mean, social media now permeates like everything in our lives, right? So everybody sort of wants to get on board and figure out how to use this stuff more effectively.
Have you been using it particularly around your speaking?
Little by little, I've been incorporating it over the years. So over the past few years, when I'm about to give a presentation, first of all, I want to set the groundwork for that, right? So even before I walk into the room, I do a couple of things. One is I make sure that the presentation I'm about to give is already online. And people kind of like that, the fact that I can upload it to slideshare.net, and at the very beginning of the talk say, you know, don't sweat it. You know, you don't have to take a lot of notes if you're not clear about what site I'm talking about or what resource it's likely in this slide presentation. You can actually download it while I'm talking right now. You can skip ahead if I'm getting too boring. And people like that. You know, they feel, you know, there's a little bit of a security blanket there, the fact that they don't have to, you know, they can pay more attention to the meaning behind the words rather than being, you know, a reporter where they have to just sort of scribble everything down.
Now, the conventional wisdom is that you don't hand out your slides at the beginning of the presentation because people have their heads buried down in the handouts rather than actually paying attention to you. And I take it you don't find that when you're sharing them with SlideShare.
Yeah, that's true. Very few people actually do skip ahead, right? So I want to sort of get them in the moment and paying attention to the sort of bigger themes that I'm trying to cover here without having to pay attention to those kinds of details. So I kind of look at these presentations and these slides as not just pulling people through my talk, but also as giving them a resource so that after they walk out of the room, you know, for days or for weeks or for months afterwards, they can refer back to the slides as a resource. They can go to some of the sites that I'm pointing out. They can share this material with their teams or their staff if they have employees. And people seem to like that. So the second thing I do before I even walk into the room is I make sure that there's a hashtag for the talk, for the event. It could be, and if people don't know what a hashtag is, it's a Twitter hashtag. You put a little number sign in front of a word, and you can actually either create a hashtag specific to your own event and publicize that, or you can hop on to an existing hashtag. So I do both things. So when I'm talking about metrics, I might just use hashtag metrics. When I'm talking about a specific set of strategies at a conference like NTC, the Nonprofit Technology Conference, or another one, I'll create a special hashtag for that. And then before we even begin the talk, I'll make sure that I use that hashtag in some of my tweets beforehand to get the ball rolling. You know, people don't want to use a hashtag if they see that nobody has ever used that hashtag before. So that's sort of like a little groundwork that you have to lay before you get going.
Yeah, the first couple on the dance floor sort of thing. And what will you do to engage people during the presentation? Do you do things like check the back channel, refer back to it? Do you try to open it up to folks who may not be in attendance but may be following the conversation on Twitter?
A couple of things. One thing is I make sure, number one, I try to engage the people who've attended so that you know, there's sort of like an interesting parallel between what you do in a crowd full of live people and what you do with social media. You're trying to engage them. You're trying to connect with them, right? So the first thing I do is I make sure I've got a microphone that I can take out into the audience. So it's sort of tear down that wall between the audience and the speaker. And so that's the same thing that happens with social media, right? You're trying to create those connections and relationships. Sometimes I've got somebody to help me. So I don't like to actually tweet during my presentations or have to check the back channel. But it's nice if somebody is there to help you do that. So I've got some assistants at Social Bright who might be able to check what are people saying as I'm going along through this presentation, because some people are, you know, a little reluctant to share publicly holding up their hand, but they're more than willing to type out, "Hey, I'm not getting it," or "I think he's off point," or something like that. So it's nice to have somebody who can check that back channel and feed you sort of real-time feedback. You can use it as a back channel where you can answer questions, invite people either during the presentation or afterwards to ask questions. The other thing to mention is I live on the northern tip of Greater Silicon Valley, and it's interesting to go to some of these conferences where there's a back channel right there on stage. They put up a big screen. They invite people. It used to be IRC chat. Now it's Twitter tweets. You know, they tell everybody in the room and they tell their online audience what the hashtag is. And as the talk progresses or as a panel sort of dives into a topic, you see in real time what people in the conversation you see in real time what people in the audience are saying and thinking about what's happening on stage. And it's a nice way to sort of bring in the community element and also to bring in people who aren't in the room into the conversation.
Do you find that's at all distracting, or are you able to keep the focus where it belongs in the room at the same time as you're interacting with that back channel?
I do think it's distracting, actually, and I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. But, you know, I'm just pointing out that it's now a fixture at a lot of different kinds of conferences. I think a better alternative is to have somebody responsible for monitoring that back channel, either on stage or right off stage, in case there's something that needs to be called to the attention of the speaker. You know, otherwise you're sort of competing for the attention of the audience, and, you know, people sort of are being amused by witty banter back and forth rather than focusing on what you're trying to say.
And there is something interesting to that idea of focusing on the person in front of the room, because we talk about social media as this thing that flattens hierarchies and it's many-to-many communication. But at the end of the day, a presentation or a speech is really about one person communicating a message, and whether it's conversational or not, the focus does need to stay on that person.
Right. I mean, Jay Rosen likes to talk about the former audience, but when people are sitting in that audience, you know, they're members of the audience. And if they want to participate, they can do it in different ways. But at the end of the day, they're coming to hear you for a reason. And, you know, if you can give them some tools and mechanisms to let them interact and ask questions or pose interesting observations during your talk or afterwards, I think they appreciate that. But I think you're right. I think, you know, people are coming to hear, you know, the person that they want to, they're coming to your talk for a reason.
Now, we're often speaking to pretty privileged audiences in terms of their access to technology, their familiarity and comfort with social media. Is there something that you do with audiences who may not be as familiar with it to help ease them in?
A couple of things. One is we have on SocialBrite a glossary of social media terms. So number one, I ask people, you know, make sure that when I sort of go off into jargon land that I stop and sort of explain what I just meant. Because, yeah, after speaking on these topics or talking about technology and social media for 10, 15 years, you know, you get lost in your own verbiage sometimes. Yeah, it's nice to actually appoint somebody and say, you know, be the jargon watch guy or woman for the next hour. We have something on the SocialBrite site called the Social Media Glossary of like 100 different terms for people who are just getting into it. So I might point to that at the outset and say, if you're not familiar with some of these concepts or terms, you know, here's an easy way. Just go to this one page and look at this index of words and phrases, and it's all explained in, right there. I don't know. The other thing is just to keep open that channel of communication and constantly stop after, you know, 10, 15 minutes and do a reality check in the room. Take the temperature of the room at the outset. Get the flavor of who your audience is, you know, what their background is, what their experience level is, or their knowledge set around the topic that you're talking about. And then stop every few minutes. You know, you don't have to do it too often, but every 15, 30 minutes and ask whether or not you're on target, whether you're confusing people, whether you're going the right direction. So, again, take the temperature of the room and do that kind of reality check.
Is there anything you've seen other folks or other organizations doing in terms of speaking that struck you as particularly intriguing or successful, or on the flip side, that just looked like a disaster waiting to happen, or that did in fact happen?
I mean, I've been to a lot of really bad talks over the years. I think the difference between the good ones and the bad ones are there's usually a guy at the front of the audience who thinks it's all about him, and he gives the same talk over and over again, almost by rote. You know, there are a lot of bad things you can do during a bad talk. One is just have tons and tons of PowerPoint slides with lots of words on them, and then to read off the slides. You know, those are the kinds of tips that every speaker knows to avoid. Guy Kawasaki is kind of a really cool public speaker. You should sort of check out, first of all, on Twitter, he's Guy Kawasaki, and whether it's him or one of his peons that he hires to tweet for him, he always has some really good tips. And I've actually spoken on the same stage with him at some different conferences over the past year. And, you know, he remembers that it's, you know, you've got to keep it short, snappy. You've got to be really engaging. It's nice to be funny, to tell some jokes, to talk with your audience like they're real people. You know, you're really just trying to have a conversation rather than giving this sort of formal presentation, right? So those are the ones that I think are best. We're sort of in a real casual kind of place here in Silicon Valley where a guy can come into the room with a Hawaiian shirt on and just, you know, go to town on ripping, you know, the headlines of, you know, the most amusing thing that's happening that day. So that's his style. But, you know, I mean, he's not the only one who does this, but I think it's sort of good to sort of emulate some of the more successful public speakers, because that's almost what he does for a living now, right? He just goes around, writes some books, gives his talks, you know, makes lots of money. I got to figure out how to do the same thing, I think.
And anything that you'd recommend for organizations if they're looking to increase their leadership's impact on the stage when they're giving presentations? It just strikes me that we spend so much effort and energy and staff time and resources into creating presentations, and they end up being these one-off 15, 20-minute, half an hour things that we push out there, and then they vanish into the ether. Is there any way that social media can help an organization realize more of a return on that investment?
Well, number one, you have to do it before you get up on that stage, right? So I think the first thing I always say to organizations is, you know, you start with a strategy. You identify your goals, your business goals, your organizational mission. And it's not, you know, there's probably one or two major things, but then there are also some micro things that you want to accomplish over the next 3, 6, 12 months. You begin tracking those. You use metrics tools to do that. We have tons of free metrics tools at our disposal today. You have to think of, you know, this social media thing as a process. You know, Beth Cantrell likes to say you have to crawl before you can walk, before you can run, before you can fly. So, you know, don't leap off that cliff just yet, you know, bucko, until you have, you know, your foundation built. So that's where I think a lot of organizations sort of miss the boat, that they go on stage, they do these great presentations, you know, they don't really get much mileage out of it. They wonder what's wrong because, you know, it was like a killer presentation, but they didn't really lay the groundwork beforehand. They didn't, you know, create that foundation on which you can build a campaign or build an event. You got to start creating those relationships. You have to use tools to find like-minded people, either in your community, in your sector, in your business area, in your neighborhood, and try to find ways to start engaging with them and turn them into supporters, evangelists, champions. I always recommend using Google Analytics to understand who your audience is of your website or your blog, so you can sort of really get a much better understanding of where people are coming from and what they're doing on your site. And, you know, Don't force presentations on people that they don't necessarily have an interest in. So get that, gather that information, see what sort of, you know, getting them jazzed and excited and passionate about your topic, and then sort of drill down in that area when you're on stage and giving those talks.
So, you know who I think that is gold for is sponsors at conferences who have the opportunity to make a 5-minute presentation from the stage. And you can always tell the ones that are going to get something out of this, because they're the ones who don't do the, hi there, thanks, we're proud to sponsor this, we've just released this product and this product, this is how we can give you end-to-end blah-de-blah. And they just pitch themselves for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
The folks who I really think are going to make an impact are the ones who have looked into the audience, here's what they're really concerned about, and I can talk about that. And they will know from the fact that I've engaged with them at that level where they live for 5 minutes, that they understand my problem, so they're a lot more open to potentially doing business with me.
Yeah. My background, Rob, is in old media, or legacy media, sometimes it's called, right? So I was in newspapers for like 20 years. And I see this over and over again with a lot of organizations where they have this, I think it really does come down to the mindset. And the old way of thinking about this is around eyeballs and targeting demographics and thinking of, you know, audiences that you can build up. And I come at it from a different perspective of thinking of how do you build a community. There's a great saying by Chris Brogan, the author and social media strategist, who says, an audience will watch you fall on a sword. A community will fall on a sword for you. And that's a really interesting way of looking at it, you know, where, you know, these are people that you don't want to just use them. You want to understand them. You want to listen to them, monitor them, use some of these monitoring tools that we showcase on Social Bride. And only then can you really understand, you know, who are your various audiences? How do you build them into a community? And, you know, what do they want from you, and how do they want to be heard from, and how do they want to listen to you?
So this is the point where I would normally ask you for a tool that you'd recommend that people investigate that they might not have heard about. And I'll do that in just a sec, but I'd like to mention socialbright.org as a fantastic tool that anybody really, nonprofit or for-profit, who wants to know more about social media, visiting that site can fill your head very quickly with some terrific ideas and pointers to fantastic tools. But with that said, what kind of tool do you think that folks might not have heard of that they should give a peek to?
Yeah, I'll mention a couple. Thanks for mentioning Socialbright. Yeah, there's a lot of head filling going on over there. There, if you go to the front page of the site and you click on Sharing Center, the second image, you'll come to a page where you can see all these resources that you can use, and all this stuff is for free. So we came to this with the idea that this stuff shouldn't be that hard to figure out how to do. You know, if you want a deeper dive, we do consulting services for you. But, you know, we put all this stuff out there and we invite the community to contribute as well. So we have things on the best metrics tools to use, the best monitoring resources, fundraising for nonprofits, how to create a social media policy, what's the best way to use Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, what are some of the resources out there, like sites where you can grab free photographs to use for your site, mobile technologies, mobile resources, video, how to create media, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, come to the Sharing Center. Please share your own knowledge. I'll also mention, I'm always surprised. I give a lot of talks, and a lot of people still don't know about Creative Commons. Creativecommons.org, they're a nonprofit in San Francisco, but I think they're just as valuable for businesses as they are for nonprofits. You can go to a site like flickr.com/creativecommons right now and find over 220 million photographs that you can use for your site. You can use them for your blog, for your newsletters, for your annual reports, for your presentations, and under various different kind of licenses. And all people want for this is, no money, just attribution. So it's like the best deal in the world. So, so I'm always out there sort of cheerleading for Creative Commons. They're about 10 years old now, but too many people still don't know how to use them. And I think speakers and anybody who's doing any kind of presentations, I'll tell you, I use tons and tons of images in my presentations because I think it's much more powerful when you talk over the images instead of putting the words on the slides. And where do you find those images? You know, I think some of the stock image stuff that I see in most presentations is, it's crap. It's really boring. It's really cliched. And if you use real people's images through Creative Commons, it's a much more powerful way to communicate, I think.
That's terrific. I've found Creative Commons fantastically useful, both for finding content that I want to use. The theme song to this podcast is Creative Commons licensed, but also for licensing my own content and seeing it go out there into the world, get shared and reshared and built on.
That's exactly right. So it goes both ways. And we put out all of our content on Socialbright under Creative Commons licenses. And I encourage some of your listeners to think about doing the same because you'll get more uplift. You get more people to share this stuff, to see it. And that's the bottom line, after all. It's not to just huddle it and keep it all on your own side. It's to get other people excited about it, to share it on some of these social networks. Make sure you're using Facebook, those social plugins that make it easy for people on Facebook to share them. There are all these cool plugins for Twitter, for Add This, for Share This. You know, if you don't have these on your blogs, for example, you're not being part of that kind of sharing community that lets other people sort of spread the word about your business, your mission, whatever it is that your organization is all about.
So, call to action, folks, join the commons. And if there was one tip that you might offer to folks who may not have been using social media in their speaking practice or in their executive communications work, is there one thing that you'd suggest?
Well, our mantra is don't do all the heavy lifting. So You know, I give a lot of talks and talk about all these things they ought to be doing, these organizations should be doing with social media. And, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of people's eyes start bugging out after an hour and a half of this stuff. There are easier ways of doing this now by engaging your community, by getting people to do stuff for you, by getting people to do blog guest posts for your own blog, by offering yourself up occasionally to do the same, and by using social media dashboards. These have really come a long way in the past 12 to 18 months. So I use Hootsuite every single day. If you don't know what that is, check it out. It's at HOOTSUYTE.com. It's free for one person, and then it scales up to $6 to $15 a month for additional people if you have a team of people doing this. And it means that you don't have to go from Twitter to Facebook to other social networks. You can do it all in one interface. And the thing I love best about some of these social media dashboards is that I keep really weird hours. I'm up until like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and you do not want to tweet at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. People are going to think you're weird. So what you do instead is, you know, you start building up all these tweets that you want to release throughout the day the next day by scheduling them on Hootsuite or doing it on some of these other tools like TweetDeck or ThinkUp or CrowdBooster. There are a bunch of these different kinds of tools that you can use. You know, they sound a little daunting at first because there's so much to them, but you can cross-post, you can schedule your posts, you can schedule a Facebook update on Hootsuite, and then the next second, you know, do something on Twitter. So I think it's really become easier and easier to use these tools to organize your social media life to just make it more manageable so that, you know, you're not driving yourself crazy with all these things that we're telling you to do here. It's not that hard to do, you know, just take one step at a time. And as you become more and more familiar with it, you know, relax, it'll sort of creep into your daily lives and just incorporate it and welcome these new sharing and social tools. And it'll, you know, before you know, it'll become second nature.
And we're back to crawl, walk, run, and fly.
Right. I did a lot of crawling.
Yeah. Well, we have to every time something changes or an interface gets switched around. Thank you, Facebook. So in a way, we're all newbies here. But thank goodness we've got folks like you to help people out. JD, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thanks, Rob. And keep it up. You're doing some great stuff up there.
Thanks so much. Now over to you. If you know a great tool or tip for using social networks and shared media in public speaking, if you have a cautionary tale, or if you have some thoughts about where all of this is headed, let me know. Share it with me on the show notes. Just visit socialsignal.com/social-speech and look for the podcast link. Or email me, rob@socialsignal.com. The music for this podcast is Cold Cloth and an Ice Pack by the wonderful late Derek Miller. You can find this song and many others under a Creative Commons license at penmachine.com. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.